everyone. Welcome to another cool episode of your favorite show, I hope, Retro Rewatch, the show where we rewatch retro TV shows and then don't remember half of it. And when I say we, I'm not talking in the royal we to myself. I'm talking with Jeff, who is, of course, with me again. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Well, maybe we are the royal we.
Could be. Both of us.
Right. Yeah. I'm doing well, and I'm happy to be back, especially because I have thoughts about this episode.
You have, well, you always have thoughts about episodes.
I do.
Not always good thoughts, but you have thoughts about them. That's why we do a show.
That's fair.
Otherwise, it would be boring, right? But yeah, we do get to go to a certain concert upstate, right? That's what happened.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
What do we? Yeah. So we're doing season two, episode 21 of Stargate SG-1, of course. And it's titled, we talked about it last time, funny enough, like Jeff gave some ideas what this could be about. 1969, aka 1969. Well, turns out it was a year. I didn't want to tell you about that. And I apparently didn't write down what you said. But yes, it was a year. Spoilers, of course, because yeah, it's a 20-something year old show, so it's 1969.
Yeah,
so we get a time travel.
Now I know
we get a time travel episode. Production notes: air date February 3rd, 1999 in the UK and March 5th, 1999 in the US. So we're still, I think, until the end of the season, because there's literally only one more episode left. We're going to stay with the weird schedule, and I hope it goes back to normal afterwards. We have a really good IMDb rating for this one, 8.7. I think it is one of the favorite episodes. I didn't check, but I would say it's probably definitely up there with an 8.7. The favorite episodes of a lot of people. So, I think for a good reason, but we'll talk about that. Written by, we know the guy, Brad Wright.
Mm-hmm. He's been around.
And we also have a returning director, Charles Coral. The Knox was the episode he directed before this one.
Another good episode.
This is also his last credit in SG-1, but definitely not the last credit he gets overall. He had a long career. I think he died in, I want to say 2014 or something, or 2004. I don't remember, but something like that. But he had a long and very fruitful career, I would say. He also directed the original MacGyver, a lot of episodes.
So that's probably
the connection to Richard Dean Anderson. And he was involved in 1984's Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, as cinematographer.
Oh, okay.
So, cool. I even wrote it down. He died in 2004. So, long career at the age of 60, he died. So, unfortunately, not with us anymore, but we at least get his work and his life's work, basically. So, thank you.
Yeah, nice.
We have a couple of guest stars. Actually, a longer list of guest stars this time.
There's quite a few
guests
with lines in this episode.
Yeah, exactly. I think this was the episode where they invested quite some of the money, maybe. I mean, with all the outside shooting and guest stars and everything that's going on. The going back in time and having to have the environment fit the time that they went to and all of that. So, as little as they actually showed. We have Alex Sahara as Michael Clark. He is actually Xels in Spirits and has a total of 6 appearances in SG-1. Yeah, he's one of the characters that keeps popping up every now and then as a different character. I think this is one of the few times we actually get to see his full face, because he usually has prosthetics on.
I just went and looked up Xels so that I could
Yeah, you can't recognize him anyway.
Now I get why I didn't recognize him at all.
No.
Okay, makes sense.
He does pop up as a Dauphin and as other characters here and there. We have Aaron Pearl as Lieutenant George S. Hammond. Lieutenant Hammond. We have Amber Rothwell as Jennifer Clark. So that those are the two hippies, just if you didn't follow that. We have Pamela Perry as Cassandra Frazier, the older Cassandra Frazier. Mm-hmm. We have Daniel Bacon as Senior Master Sergeant Russell Benson. Last episode we saw him was in Show and Tell, so actually previous episode. We have Glynis Davies as Catherine Langford, and she'll be back later. I'm just going to tell you that because otherwise we would forget.
Huh.
Yeah, she'll be back.
So
I don't remember whether it's in her character or in a different character that I don't remember.
As
an actress.
So the actress is back. Okay.
For sure. But that's also quite common that especially guest stars, unless they're super, super famous, but even if they're super, super famous, they might just show up every now and then. Either the same character again or a different character just because, you know, money is always a good thing. And also, the production company, they know them, they know their work and whatever. So it's like, it's easier sometimes to recast someone as a different character than to find a completely new person.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah. Fred Henderson as Major Robert Thornbird. You might know him as Clark's dad on Superman and Lois, a very recent show.
Which I haven't actually seen any episodes of.
Huh, interesting.
Maybe that should go on the list.
That will definitely go on the list. But we will have to wait 20 years before we can watch it.
By the time we get through SG-1,
yeah,
Superman and Lois will be retro.
That's true. Sean Campbell as Senior Sergeant Bridges. Many SG-1 credits, last as a Dauphin in Family. So also another repeat.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to butcher the name Ifosa Utmaji, as I would say. Otumaji, something like that. I'm sorry.
Otumaji?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Airman, First Class, Billingsley. So also a good character. Yeah. You will be surprised to learn that the German title actually is not a spider.
Really?
Yeah, because it is 1969.
I guess 1969 translates into German as 1969.
I guess so. Maybe it was the German affinity for order and for numbers, and they're like, oh yeah, that works. We'll just keep that.
Okay, I'll accept that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that was why. Though it's not explicitly stated in this episode, Daniel Jackson teaches Teal'c how to drive a car, as shown by Teal'c's driving the bus.
Yeah, I did notice Teal'c was driving in the one scene.
Yeah. And keep that in mind. That will come up at some later date.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The actual NORAD facility on the Cheyenne Mountain does not and never did house a missile training silo, unless what they...
Yeah, I did have an issue with that when that happened, because I already knew that there were never missiles there.
Yeah, the mission of, as far as we know at least, the mission of Cheyenne Mountain Air Station is strictly early warning. Training silos are only found at missile bases such as the Vandenberg AFB in California. We know from also that of space launch sites. The F.E. Warren AFB in Wyoming and Grand Forks AFB in North Dakota.
It would be very difficult to have a missile silo in Cheyenne Mountain because it's literally under the mountain.
Freaking mountain. Like, why would you do that? It's
right.
Like, it's the hardest place to do missile tests of any sort. The scenes at the Yonkers Observatory were filmed in the Gordon MacMillan Southam Observatory at the H.R. MacMillan Space Center in BC, in Vancouver, BC, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
And the scenes at the Washington, D.C. Armory were filmed at the Seaforth Armory, also in BC.
Now, That looked so familiar.
Yes, we've been there before.
We've been in that armory before. I've recognized it.
We have been at exact that armory multiple times already before, and it will probably come. I don't know, but it will probably come back. It is a favorite location. Catherine's home is actually the Walnut House Bed and Breakfast at 1315 Walnut Street in Vancouver. So also not New York, even though Vancouver sometimes gets treated as New York. So. So that's it for now. I have a ton more for later. There's a lot of detail about this one. We'll save that for a later date.
I bet there's a lot of detail that I missed. Mm-hmm. Although there's one detail that I will call out.
Okay.
That I saw, and I was very happy when I saw the detail.
Okay. I have an idea what it could be, but I'll be pleasantly surprised if I don't. And I will be
probably
surprised.
Not what you're thinking of.
Good. Okay. That would be cool. So, should we jump in?
Let's do it.
So, we start at SGC in the Stargate room. SG-1 is ready to leave. Carter is missing because, and I quote, she said something about having to time the calculations exactly right this time of year. Something about solar that Daniel didn't pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Daniel. You should listen to the women when they tell you stuff. Just saying.
Right.
Carter comes in and she says, this time of the year, the direct line between P2X555 and the Earth takes us within 70,000 miles, which is not a lot in astronomical terms.
No.
A lot on Earth, off the sun. I have to update the computer's drift calculations to include gravitational space time warping. That will be significant.
Turns out.
Carter still, and she is, I think Hammond is there, and he notes that she has kind of a nasty cut from one false step. If you remember, she cut herself, or she was cut with the knife, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is somehow significant, but we don't know why yet.
I mean, the fact that they call it out and they pause the camera on her hand.
Yes. Yeah, and Hammond remarks about it and then gives her a note for later. And he says it's fairly self-explanatory. Oh boy, was he wrong.
He also tells her, don't open it until you get through the gate.
Yeah. Yes. So they go through the gate and end up back at SGC.
For a second.
And then the gate disappears.
Yeah, it just kind of dissolves away.
Mm-hmm. To be replaced by a missile engine. So where the hell are they? Jack, the veteran military man, and probably also space nerd, because he likes to stare into space at least, recognizes it as the butt end of a Titan missile.
Mm-hmm.
Direct quote, of course. And it's about to test burn. And the team kind of tries to randomly scream and push buttons and try to abort the whole thing.
And it doesn't work.
And it, of course, doesn't work. Which I had a problem with, because I'm like, later on we know they had cameras in there. And I'm like, weren't they watching?
Right. If they're doing a test burn, you'd think they'd be monitoring the test burn.
Yeah, especially since they have recordings later and like everything. So I'm like, I mean, maybe it was just...
That's a really good point.
I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I don't know. I would assume in 1969, they had the capability of like watching it live, basically.
Of course they did.
So I'm like, it's not like where they had to record it and watch it later or something.
Yeah, back then it was called closed circuit television.
Yeah, exactly. So, CCTV. So, I don't know. It didn't make sense, but it was funny. It was funny also that Teal'c just stands underneath it, looks at it, takes out his Zat gun, and zats the thing. And the countdown goes to zero, because of course it has to. And nothing happens.
Right.
And Jack says, how did you know that would work? And Teal'c said, I did not.
Teal'c, ever pragmatic. I mean, he knew that putting his face against the wall wasn't going to protect him from the rocket burns.
Yeah.
So might as well stand where he is and try and do something.
Exactly. And I mean,
because he's use, done either way.
Exactly. And use what he has, which was a Zed gun, which was hell of handy. I mean, this is probably one of the few good uses for a Zed gun that I would accept. As stupid as a prop as it is.
Yeah, in this episode, the MacGuffin prop.
Yes. The guards come in, and SG-1 surrenders to them. Like, so, that is the intro. That's the teaser. So, when you saw that, what did you think?
I thought it was a compelling intro, and it gave us a really interesting setup for the rest of the episode. Mm-hmm. We haven't discovered yet that they're in the past. So it could be that there's hints, but it could be like they jumped realities or something like that. Because, you know, it's a sci-fi show, so that could be a thing. Or maybe there's this thing where you can intercept the beam going from one Stargate to another. Yeah. And so they've been captured and anyhow.
There is other possibilities, but the hint is in, well, it's they're on Earth. It's a Titan missile, and the uniforms of the guards are kind of old school.
Yep.
So there's hints, but it's not spelled out
yet. But it's not blatant, which I was pleased with. The part that I did have trouble with was the Titan missile.
Yes.
In Cheyenne Mountain, because that's never been a thing, and that seems like.
Weird idea.
They do a lot to make sure they have details right.
Yeah.
That was. So why did they get it so wrong with this one?
Yeah, and why was there not a better idea to kind of fabricate like the surprise? But okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So that's where we are. We go back basically. Jack gets hit by the butt of a gun. Like from one of the guards, because of course he's being his usual petulant self a little bit. He's like weird comments or whatever. Who we know later is Hammond and another guard. They're looking at the gadgets that they have with them. There's like the guns and like everything. And they're inspecting them. I said, we don't know them yet. It's just military men for us, but later we know it's Hammond. We learn that they got ordered to ship them off and forget they oversaw anything. Very typical. And then Hammond finds the note with a name on it. And all it says, and that's why I noted earlier, it's like, oh, it's self-explanatory. And I'm like, is it? It literally just says, help them. And two dates.
It says George on the front.
Yeah.
And he opens it up, help them, and then the dates. Yeah.
And that's like, okay, very self-explanatory.
Well, I mean, in retrospect, yes.
In retrospect, but, yes. And I mean, there's also a reason why he had to be vague to some extent, but like, why did he then say, oh, it's self-explanatory? If he had said, oh, you'll understand it when you're there or whatever, okay, maybe, but...
Yeah,
it was not self-explanatory. I mean, to the point that they were confused what it even meant later on. But I mean, figured it out at some point, of course. We go to a holding cell. You know, we've seen that set before. It's just dressed slightly differently, but it's the same set.
It's the same. Yes. Yep. And So I like that. That Sam's already figured it out.
Yes. She's like, oh, we must have traveled back in time.
And
Daniel's super excited. He's like, oh, we're the first people in history to travel back in time. As far as they know of.
As far as they know. Yep. And I like that while Daniel's all excited about maybe we can explore and see things and maybe we could go back farther in time. And Sam goes in about the whole grandfather paradox thing and you have to be careful. We don't want to screw up the rest of the timeline. And so that was good that they did that because, you know, they needed to establish for the audience why the team has to be so careful now.
Yes. Yeah. Which is a major point from now on, and which is, I think, also very sensible. Jack says, correct me if I'm wrong, Captain, but haven't we altered history already by just being here? Which is a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just your mere presence and the fact that you're so different and have different technology with you is already altering, as far as you know at least, altering history as you know it.
Right.
Or is it? But we'll get to that later.
Right. Yep.
At least they think so. So, and I think Carter points out, yeah, they have probably, but they have to do damage control. They should definitely limit how much, like, how much they change after, like, the initial that they couldn't control. I mean, if they had known and had a choice, I don't think they would have done it. So that damage is done and they couldn't do anything about it, but they can definitely try to limit the ongoing impact it has.
Mm-hmm. Which is smart.
Yeah, and Jack points out, he's spot on right now. He's like, this is a top secret facility. Anonymity does not go over big here.
No, and he's right.
Yeah. And then we get a funny scene. Guards come in, and they think they're Russian, which, yeah, 1969, the whole,
makes sense. That's totally...
Totally makes sense. They start, they have some little phrases in Russian, and Daniel answers in Russian. And yet. and Jack is like, really? He's like, what? I speak 23 languages.
And then he realizes what he had done, and he's like, oh.
And he's like, oh my God.
yeah
he didn't think about that at all. He was like, it's just reactive, like someone talks to him in Russian, he's like, I speak Russian, sure.
Sure, I'll answer you back.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, no.
Yeah. So I think they take Jack to an interrogation room.
Yes, because this is an absolutely wonderful interrogation.
It is. And I have some like verbatim quotes from that one. One thing I noticed was casual smoking indoors. Very 1969. Yes, I
know. Yep. And Jack, he starts coughing.
Yes,
from the cigarette smoke.
Exactly, because he's not used to that. And then he gets asked who he is, basically. And I think the Thornbird points out that they had some weapon that they used against the rocket,
the missile,
right? The missile, yeah. Or the rocket engine, at least. And Unil says, weapon? And Thornbury says, our camera saw some sort of weapon. I said, oh, well, it's hard to say.
Which I thought was really funny.
Yeah, and Thornbury is like, yeah. Some sort of state secret? And he's like, no, it's just difficult to pronounce. And
which, yeah, the setup and then the payoff with those lines. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Oh, and I think I skipped over it. Jack had told him that his name is James T. Kirk.
Mm-hmm. From the Enterprise.
Yeah, yep. From the Enterprise. And then Thornbird said, Kirk, you can talk to me or you can talk to the CIA. And I said, oh, all right. I'll be honest with you, Bob. My name is not Kirk. It's Skywalker. Luke Skywalker.
Which I thought was super funny.
That was super funny. And I have like a little tidbit for that. So of course, there are references to Star Trek and to Star Wars. Star Trek first aired in 1966, 3 years before this episode took place. So the name could have been better known, though it's possible that the base commander had not heard of it because this show was literally obscure and had just a cult audience and most people didn't care about it. So it is, I mean, today probably most people would recognize it or at least know what it's connected to. Back then, probably not. The actual Star Wars film was not released until 1977, so for sure he did not know about Luke Skywalker. I mean, or it's right. At least very, very, very unlikely. I mean, maybe someone had dreamt up that name already, but it's unlikely at least. Not in popular culture, at least.
Right, yep.
So, but that was a really nice connection between Stargate, Star Trek, and Star Wars that they put up here.
Yep, it was.
It was.
So, but anyhow, really I loved that
scene. Yes.
It was. I loved the whole scene. Yes, delightful. That's a great way to
describe it. Delightful and so Jack. I mean, this like joking, petulant, not telling him anything useful kind of way that he does, like with this smug face sometimes. He's like, yeah, I'm not telling you anything useful, basically.
Yep.
And he plays with them and whatever. Like, it's like the superiority that he has in that situation, like, it's just so fitting. We go back to SGC briefly, because Hammond gets asked, like, SG1 is, of course, late. Mm-hmm. And Hammond gets asked, like, what to do. Like, oh, should they send a third party? And Hammond's like, nope, we will not do anything about this. They will have to figure it out themselves. Clearly letting on without saying it that he knows more than he's letting on.
Yeah. Yeah, he says something like, they're on their own for this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, not normal procedure. Usually they would have sent, like, at least dialed up and sent a rescue party or tried to reach
or them, a whatever. Melp or something.
Something. And they're like, he's like, nope, we're not doing anything. Because, of course, I mean, we know later that he knows what's going on. But, well, it's, I would say at this point, pretty clear that he knows more. He probably knows where they are for some reason or another. Apparently, the team gets moved now. I mean, we heard earlier that they got orders to do so. Now we're in the truck.
Mm-hmm. In the very not Colorado landscape.
Yes, yeah, of course.
Certainly not around Colorado Springs.
Not at all. Carter wants them to escape and stay out of history, which I think is a sensible thing. And Jack remarks, it's like, Captain, where there's a will, there's an oar.
Which is really funny. That's very Jack.
That's an oar. The tire on the track blows for some reason. Very convenient. I don't think that was an accident.
Yeah, the timing seemed far too coincidental.
Yes, I think someone planned that, and that someone is a certain Hammond, as we'll get to see in a second, because he steps into the cab, and he wants to know who gave them the note. And that's when Carter sees his name tag, and she decides to tell him who she is. Like, she is like, okay, this is clearly Hammond. He has to know he's George Hammond, Lieutenant George Hammond, as it turns out. And she's like, okay, we have to trust him. Like, and I think she realizes that General Hammond knew this would happen because he gave her the note, and she points that out even. And so she explains that they traveled back in time. And they learned it's August 4th, 1969. And Jack kind of convinces, I mean, of course, Hammond doesn't believe it because that is a ridiculous story. I mean, as ridiculous as the whole situation is, but that is a ridiculous story, that the time travels from the future, right?
Oh, yeah.
But Jack convinces him because he's like, I know how you watched the moon landing. And because they really do know him. It's like, oh, with, what was it? With his sick parents, I think, or something?
It was with his dad after his dad's first heart attack.
Yeah, something like that. Exactly. And that does convince him, which, yeah, makes sense. Carter chuckles at Lieutenant Hammond.
Right.
Yeah, because they only know him as like the big, like, general, their boss, and like, this is a lieutenant. Not very high up.
Yeah, and the whole lieutenant thing.
Yeah.
For her, it happens after he calls her like miss or ma'am.
Yeah.
Like that. And she says, actually, it's captain.
Yes. So higher rank.
And then points out to him that he's a lieutenant talking to a captain.
Exactly. So that is funny. Jack zaps the other two guards. And then they learn that the gear that they had with them, I mean, they kind of have to retrieve it and probably destroy it. Because they don't want that in military hands in the 60s, like 20, what was that, late 90s technology in the 1969s is probably, 1969 is probably not a good idea.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah, so they ambush it. And that I have a note for. The truck carrying the equipment is actually painted in a four-color woodland camo. And that pattern wasn't even used until 1975.
Whoops.
So a military truck in 69 would have been painted a flat OD green.
Just like all the military vehicles that you see in MASH and in World War II movies.
Exactly. So, little mistake. They probably either didn't realize or didn't have anything else available. And they're like, okay, we'll just use that. And nobody will notice. Well, people notice. So, but a little thing. Jack jumps into the back of the... So they stop it. Jack jumps into the back of the truck, opens the boxes, takes a GDO and another Z. I wrote another cat, another Z.
Hey, you know, Ripley had a cat and it worked out well for her. So well, maybe
with a cat. Maybe there was a cat.
They should take a cat.
Yeah, but hopefully a cat wasn't in the box because then it's not Schrodinger's cat anymore. It's clearly dead because Jack disintegrates both boxes.
Well, okay. So at this point, the Zat gun is clearly the MacGuffin of the episode.
I 100%.
Because they used it to take out the extra guards without killing anyone. Now they use it to get rid of all the extra equipment.
Yes.
And I assume that at this point, I assumed that I would be seeing the Zat gun again to help them move the plot along.
Probably yes. I mean why else would they keep two of them? They need them for something. Everything else gets destroyed, which makes sense. I mean, even that is questionable. I mean, they need a GDO to go home, so that makes sense. The Zats. Yeah, maybe. Jack asks Hammond for some cash, and Hammond has some, and Jack says, I'll pay you back with interest. Remember that one. They'll come back.
Okay.
Yeah, he comes back later in the episode, actually. And I have a little quote. General Hammond, Lieutenant Hammond says, General Hammond, I like the sound of that. Yeah, of course, who wouldn't?
Right.
Because I think someone called them General Hammond accidentally. And he asks, what are you going to do now? And O'Neill says, well, you're better off not knowing, but I do want you to know that what I'm about to do keeps you from getting court-martialed. And then he uses the Zat gun to zap Hammond so that he's also down. And then they hike to the interstate. And I've read somewhere that it probably wasn't even interstate around, but don't know.
So in 1969, around there, I believe there was not an interstate through
the area,
Colorado Springs.
I've read that somewhere.
Yeah, there was a highway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
But it wasn't the interstate. The interstate there would be I-25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which goes north south. That wasn't a thing.
Yeah, but they hiked to the interstate or highway or whatever. I mean, that could have literally also just been Jack assuming there's an interstate when back then there wasn't one. Right? Because later on there definitely is.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. So Jack's plan is to find the Stargate. Good plan. They realize that the note is very cryptic. And that's the point I mentioned earlier. It's like Hammond said, this is self-explanatory. It's not.
So, hold on. I just did a quick bit of Googling.
Okay.
Because I wanted to make sure that I was right about I-25. And it turns out that construction on I-25 was finished in Colorado on September 21st, 1969.
But then it wasn't active yet because is April, right? Was it April? April 4th
August.
Or something? August? Okay, but I mean, even
wasn't
then,
it, I think it was, no, it was
August. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was August. You're right.
But it was close to being done.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Okay, good. That makes sense. So the note is very cryptic. We don't know what it means. We learned that Daniel was I think Jack references the earlier Russian connection, and this is where we learned that Daniel actually learns 23 languages, but he first we learned that he was 4 and a half years old in 1969, which gives us an interesting little tidbit, because If like he was 4.5 years or 4 years old, 4.5 years old in 1969, that would just put his birth in 1965. And Michael Shanks, the actor who plays Jackson, was actually born December 15th, 1970. So that would make him almost 6 years younger than his character.
Okay.
Just little thing I wanted to mention. We also learned that Daniel thinks they should... they want to hitchhike. What did they do? They sent the woman out to and I quote, stick her thumb out. Hoping that...
The woman in military clothes.
Yes. Good idea.
Yeah.
Daniel thinks they should visit Catherine in New York. I think someone points out the obvious problem with that because he is not supposed to meet her until March.
Yeah, Sam points that out. Yeah.
Yeah, and he says, yeah, so what? We'll just be in disguise. I speak 23 languages.
Which is, okay, great. Yeah. Let's roll with it.
And then we get a funny, and I really love this, we get a funny Teal'c thing.
Like, oh, right, because every car that goes by Sam, they just zip by. No one's stopping.
Yeah, yeah. And he gets fed up with it. It's not fast enough for him, so he's like, this method appears to be ineffective. And he just goes up to the street. The next thing is like, I think it's like, it's the bus that he stops. And he literally steps in front of the bus and stops it.
And it works. It stops.
And it does work. It does stop. And I think the guy then also says, oh, I would have stopped anyway. So great. Great job. The Colorado license plate on the bus. I don't know if you saw that.
This is one of the things that made me very happy. When they showed the license plate, I'm like, oh, that's an accurate license plate for the time period.
It is. PJ.
That made me very happy.
2251. Is the license plate. It is from, and now I'm probably going to butcher the name and you will have to correct me, Arapaho County?
Arapaho County.
Yeah, near Denver. So you would probably know. You've probably been there.
Okay. Oh, many, many times.
Exactly.
Okay, so side note, I'll give you a little bit of history on Colorado license plates. So for a very long time, the population in Colorado was low enough that they could use the first letter of a license plate. Mm-hmm. The license plates are always the same. Start with a letter, a couple letters, and then you have numbers.
Yeah.
That first letter or first couple letters, you could use that to identify what county a license plate was from.
Yeah. That is, in Europe, still the predominant way of doing license plates. Not everywhere. Not our places. I think UK doesn't do it as far as I know, but Austria, for example, does.
It's not that way in Colorado anymore. Mm-hmm. But another side note with that, it used to be the license plates that started with the letter Z, or for our UK friends, Z.
yes, Z.
Those were all for rental cars.
Oh, interesting.
And eventually they had to stop doing that because rental cars were getting targeted for theft and break-ins
at a
disproportionately high rate because it was obvious they were rental cars.
Yeah. In Germany, for example, and I think even in most European countries, it's probably still that way. I know in Germany, all the military cars have a Y in the beginning.
Okay.
And all diplomatic cars have, or the official diplomatic cars, both in Austria and in Germany, have CD. With the exception of, let's say, a lower level, I mean, lower in air quotes, that then let's say the even private cars or whatever, like the official ones have CD. The private cars of diplomatic staff or diplomats have, here in Vienna, at least WD. W is Vienna, Wien, and then D for the diplomatic. So, and that's in Austria in general. Like, if you're in another city, you get whatever city letter in a D. So, it still works that way to this day. But also, not everywhere.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, here's another tidbit for you. The license plate looked kind of old and worn out.
Yes.
It shouldn't look that way because back then, every year when you got new license plates, the year was stamped into it. It wasn't stickers that go on like we have now.
So it would have been
a newer plate.
Yeah.
or newer looking plate, yeah, unless they weren't renewing their plates and then they could be older.
I mean, they're hippies, so.
They're hippies, yeah.
Yeah. The hippies mentioned they're heading to upstate New York, some big concert. They mentioned.
which is funny because if you know enough about U.S. history,
yeah,
and big concerts, it's easy to put together that they're headed to Woodstock.
Yes, it's very clearly Woodstock that is kind of implied here without being said. I mean, they didn't know it was a big concert. Well, they knew it was a big concert and like people, a number of people there apparently, but they didn't know how important and long. Like everybody knows Woodstock, like these days. Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows? Not everybody, maybe. And we got a nice little dialogue in the bus between Michael and Tilk that I loved.
Oh, yes.
So Michael says, "I'm Michael." And Tilk says, "I'm not at liberty to reveal my identity," in typical Tilk like way. And when Michael says, "Oh, far out." And he points to like the symbol in like on his forehead. Why it didn't hide that, I don't understand, but it helps in this situation, or it's like it's a nice conversation. Maybe that's why the writers needed it to be that way, so it was that way. because Michael says, "That thing, what does it symbolize? Peace?" And Tilk, of course, points out slavery to false gods. And Michael says, "Right on." So right on. It's made out of, and Tilk says, "Do not discuss it further." And Michael says, "I dig it. It's cool. So you just go AWOL." And he says, "Hey, we're cool. After the concert, me and Jenny were even thinking of crossing the border up to Canada." And Tilk asks, like, for what a reason? Because, of course, he's not from Earth and he doesn't understand the context. And Michael says, "You know, man, the war." And Tilk says, "The war with Canada?"
Which is super funny.
Yeah.
The war with Canada.
The war with Canada. Yeah, so very clearly alien. Does not know what he's talking about.
No.
Yeah, and then we get
Tilk has not been studying U.S. history.
No, he's not. Yeah, and then we get something fun that we've not had in SG-1 at all, which I really enjoyed. It's usually it depends, but in this case, it was really good. We get a musical montage.
There's a problem in the music montage.
Okay,
but the music montage is awesome.
Yes. Okay. There is definitely a problem. They go on Route 66 East. They buy clothes. Daniel teaches Tilk how to drive. We see him driving. And then there is, maybe that's the problem I saw as well. We see the cars like on the highway. And the cars going in the direction of the bus are kind of old, but the cars going the opposite direction are kind of modern.
That was the other problem.
Okay, there was another one? Then I didn't catch that.
They took Route 66, which doesn't go through Colorado.
Ah, that's true. 66 East. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there is a state highway 66, but that's much farther north because it goes like from Boulder.
Yeah.
And
okay. That makes also no sense, yes. Yeah, but I like that musical montage in general. It's had little issues here and there, but it kind of speeds things along and still gives you some context what's happening. Like little, there's just little scenes where it's like, oh, they're buying clothes, they're driving, whatever. It's like little things. So, yeah, it's fun. That's it.
Another side note on Highway 66 in Colorado, I drive it all the time because it is at the just north of Boulder, and it's the relatively direct route to get to Highway 36 to go up to Estes Park in the mountains. There's a great little town where Highway 66 and Highway 36 come together. It's called Lyons. And there's a couple great little breweries, a really good distillery, and an awesome coffee shop. And there's a whole blues and folk festival that happens
there,
right along the Platte River.
Yeah, there's probably some bluegrass in that area.
Bluegrass, thank you. Bluegrass festival,
yeah,
and I've gone to that many times, and it's a wonderful event. So that's there you amazing. Go. We've now just turned Retro Rewatch into your Colorado tourist podcast.
Yeah, that's true. The Colorado. So if the state of Colorado wants to sponsor us for like all the awesome travel advice they're giving, and like and the free advertising they're getting for an awesome state, then hey, reach out to Jeff, please.
Yeah, just send us an email at hello@retrorewatch.com.
Smooth, Jeff. Smooth.
Yeah.
We get wait a second, I think I jumped over.
I totally derailed us.
Yes.
And
we get the campfire, yes. So
yes,
so they're,
okay.
They're stopping somewhere, there's a campfire. The couple, the hippies, they're kind of off somewhere else, and the team is talking. And they figured out they were Carter figured out they were sent back because of a solar flare. Somehow she figured that out. I mean, it was kind of obvious at some point because she was doing the calculations of because of solar flares, and it kind of makes sense that probably was the cause.
Well, and she even mentions that she must have gotten something wrong with the calculations.
Yes, yeah. And she says the gravity slingshotted them back. Hey, that is another Star Trek reference.
That's a Star Trek reference right there.
And the time and the dates and the notes are probably flares. That's the jump she takes. She's like, I mean, Hammond seems to have known, and that's probably why that makes sense. Yeah, it does. Turns out the hippies were listening. And then Jack pretends they're aliens.
Which was super funny.
Yeah.
And he says, we're from a galaxy.
Yeah, no, I have that even in like
verbatim. Okay, good, good.
So Jenny says, you said that you were in trouble with the establishment. And O'Neill says, yeah, just not the establishment of this planet. Yeah. And then Jack says, oh, it's true, Michael. We came to Earth to hide among your people a long, long time ago. And Daniel kind of catches on. He's like, from a galaxy far, far away.
Which is super funny.
Super funny. And then O'Neill says, but now it's time to go home and we need your help. And they enlist them to help them to get to where they need to go. And Jack.
Okay, so this is another Zatgun MacGuffin moment.
Yes, because he shows off the gun by fire.
Yeah, he shoots the fire with a Zatgun.
Yes, and they're like, they're super impressed. And I'm like, I'm not.
Yeah. Still looks like a stupid prop.
It still does, yes. We get another musical montage. Jack buys a newspaper. And the newspaper is actually quite a fun prop, I have to say. I don't know if you stopped and paid attention to it, but I did.
Well, I noticed it had President Nixon on the cover.
Yes.
And
But
I missed reading the other headlines, but okay. I figured they were probably relevant because they paused long enough for us to see it.
They were not super relevant for the plot, but they were kind of fun little Easter eggs, I would call them.
Okay.
Because they were actually accurate. It's the New Jersey Star that he buys. To check the date, it's August 10th, 1969. And it shows, amongst others, you also get to see other headlines that are quite cool. Two headlines. Nixon to vacation at the summer White House. And the other one is Sharon Tate, four others murdered. The latter refers to the infamous Charles Manson murders, which had occurred the day before on August 9th. So they are accurate to the day, to the date. And as far as I know, the other stuff, there's other headlines I didn't note down, probably as well.
If they got those right, they went to the trouble to get them all right.
Yeah. I mean, it's also not that hard. Just like literally go to the news, look what happened, what would have been in the news, or look at the real newspaper and be like, okay, this is what they wrote. Okay, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, newspaper archives are a thing. So especially these days, probably even on the internet, or some of them at least. So should be easy enough. They drop Jack and Tilk off at the observatory. And then we get another montage because they're off to go to Catherine's house.
Right. So, Okay, this episode is interesting because we have the A story and B story thing going on.
But very briefly.
Not consistently.
No, very brief. Actually, very, very briefly only. I think this is the only time we really get this A and B story. So far, we've not had any.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the little 5 seconds of Hammond could be a C story.
That doesn't count.
Basically, it doesn't count, yeah. But like we get the typical thing where they split up a little bit to do. And I mean, the split up is also pretty typical. Jack and Daniel are going to go and do some sciencey nerdy stuff. And Daniel and Jack and Teal'c are going to do the other sciencey nerdy stuff because they're going to watch for solar flares.
Mm-hmm.
They go to Catherine, and Daniel speaks in a so Carter and Daniel are pretending to be like scientists of some sort, and Daniel speaks in a weird, really weird German accent, like really bad German accent. Funny side note, in the German version, Jackson uses a French accent instead of the German one while talking to Catherine Langford about the story.
Okay, that's funny. I hadn't even thought about that. I guess in each country, if it's a German-speaking country, they need to use a different language.
Yeah. In other countries, probably would be fine to do German, but in German-speaking countries, that would be kind of not make a lot of sense because the show is in German, like it's dubbed. So you would have to pick another accent to pretend that it's different. So yeah, but that was that was literally the little thing. The German is, by the way, terrible. Just say.
Yeah.
As always.
I don't speak German.
Yeah.
But it sounded like, and I'm doing air quotes, stage talk.
Yes, it kind of was, exactly. Daniel casually drops Ernest Littlefeld's name, which I found that was a nice little Easter egg.
Oh, right. Catherine's
boyfriend. Yeah, exactly. And they learn, eventually they convince her to reveal where the Stargate is. And she says, it's in some old armory in Washington, D.C., gathering dust. So this is,
and
of course,
then they
post-accident.
Say, do you know which one?
Yeah.
But we don't hear her answer.
We don't hear your answer, yes.
But obviously she knows.
Yeah. We go to the observatory. Not super important. They see the flare. Yippee. Done.
So they've confirmed the dates and times on Hammond's note. So they know tomorrow is the day that they have to get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. The bus comes back and the team is united off to the armory. And the hippies want to go with the team. And we learn that Michael got drafted, but they will go to the concert first. That's what we hear. And I think does Jack want to say something and get stopped or something like that? It's like they basically, someone says, they have to make their own decisions basically.
Yeah, they're thinking about going to Canada because he was drafted, so he can avoid having to serve.
Yeah.
And Jack starts to tell him about Vietnam.
Yeah.
Presumably. Sam shuts him down before he can say anything.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, very natural, I would say, reaction to say, I mean, he knows that if he does get drafted, he probably will die or at least get, like, injured one way or another.
He's going to be messed up
one way or another. Exactly. And I mean, so it's like, but then, yeah, it's just that Sam is smart enough to say, well, the second we shouldn't do that.
So this scene, what it does for me is sets up the team getting to meet these two characters again in the future. And so I was like, oh, that'd be really cool.
I mean, they would have been interesting. They would have been much older than the team. So.
Oh, yeah.
But still, yeah, could be. It's possible. I mean, if they survived, we don't know.
Right.
Yeah. But split.
I just thought that would be super cool.
So today split with Hux. It was a really nice scene. Like they're, you can I think what this is trying to say is like it's been a road trip and a quite cool one. And I think they've become kind of friends almost. At least like for how short it was. I mean, took a couple days, but so yeah, they like each other.
They have a relationship now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not that they will probably ever meet again, but who knows.
Well, in my head canon, they're going to get to meet again.
Yeah, who knows? Could happen. We go to the warehouse. There's a big box, kind of thin and rectangular and very high. The Stargate, of course.
It looks a lot like the box that that we saw when the second Stargate was not where it was supposed to be.
Yeah. The interesting thing is the Stargate is sitting right up this time. They put it actually up because last time it was lying down.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So, convenient. The guard gets zapped and then they open the box, which the Stargate is in.
Okay, so here's where I had another problem.
Okay.
Teal'c and Daniel, like Spider-Man, just scramble up the sides of this thing and release these latches.
Yeah.
And so first they had Spider-Man skills.
Yes.
Then when they pull back so you can see the walls coming down, I don't remember seeing Teal'c and Daniel still on the frame.
Oh, I didn't even pay attention to that. I had a whole different problem with this.
Okay.
So
between us, the whole scene is full of flaws.
Yeah. So because 15 episodes earlier in Thor's Chariot, Daniel said that he has a problem with heights, his fear of heights.
Oh, yeah. In this episode, he
absolutely fearlessly scales up the side of this probably 2-3 story high crate, box, whatever. It was just target the store to open it. So either he gotten over his fear of heights pretty quickly, or they just forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe there's a good therapy program in Stargate Command.
Could be. Maybe they have good insurance. Who knows? Yeah. They use the trucks to power the gate. Genius idea. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But the guards show up, because of course they do. And there's a quick shootout, like Zed guns everywhere. This is where we needed the Zed guns again.
Right. Right.
And then
they had to be able to shoot back without leaving any evidence.
Exactly. And they go through the gate without any evidence and without also killing anybody.
Right.
They wanted to limit the impact they have. And if they had killed one of the guards, who knows? Maybe that was the future president or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, they go through the gate.
And so they go through the gate, and my first thought was, they did it. And then my second thought was, there's still enough time left that either they did it. And now we get to see Michael and, what's her name? Jennifer?
Yeah,
Would they look like as an old couple?
We don't.
or they're not where they're supposed to be.
Well, turns out they're not where they're supposed to be. It is Stargate Command. There's a Stargate. There's a ton of stuff that's covered.
Yeah, so it looks sort of like it's a shuttered program at this point.
Yeah, I have a alternative idea that I read somewhere, but we'll get to that in a second. Jack says, he calls out, Auntie M, Auntie M. You know what that is yet another reference to?
Another Wizard of Oz reference.
Correct.
Jack does that pretty pretty often.
He does. It is absolutely another Wizard of Oz. And then an old lady in a white dress walks in. Kind of looks like a nightgown almost.
Kind of does.
Yeah. And she knows them. She's like, Daniel, I hardly recognize you with hair.
So apparently, she knows him bald.
I guess, yeah. Bald and probably old. I mean, if she's old, then he's much older. Because she was a kid. So it's Cassandra.
So I thought this was a fun reference.
Yes.
Bringing Cassandra into this episode.
Yeah. And she says she's been expecting them her whole life. They're in the future, and Sam explained it to her like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So Sam basically told her that this would happen and that she would have to help them and all of this. Mm-hmm. And she says, oh, but you gotta go now. It's like we don't have time. And she loses a device on her wrist to activate the Stargate.
And it activates the Stargate in a completely different way.
Yes.
Because we don't even get a kawoosh.
Yeah, but we've seen this before.
We have, but not from humans.
Not from humans, from the Nox.
Yeah.
And there's some explanation for that. Because, I mean, she has Naquadah in her, like, blood. So she can control other devices, and this is one of the devices, probably the Nox we're using, or to go old or something. So it is definitely possible. And there's an alternative, that's why I want to mention it, there's an alternative idea why everything was covered up. And one is that the program was shuttered. There's an alternative idea, and it's never explained, so we don't know, that she said they don't have time because they covered up all the devices and whatever and like removed everybody because they knew that the SG-1 was coming to not give them any information about the future.
Oh, okay. That's clever.
Also possible. So who knows? And maybe
I like that's that. Fine.
Yeah. So she uses the she gives them one hint. She says, I will tell you this, your journey's just beginning. And I love that. Because at that point, they didn't know how long the journey actually would be. Mm-hmm. And how interesting and fun the journey would be and what they would get to do. That I know, and you don't, and super excited about. And so with 20-something years and 10 seasons and multiple series and whatever on, multiple movies, I have to agree with her.
Yeah, well, who would have thought that their journey would have brought us to the point where you and I are here today, mm-hmm. recording in real time from different continents to talk about a show that's
27 years old.
Over 20 years old now.
Yeah. And then they go. And they make it back.
And this time, hooray, they make it back where they're supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, Cassie knows her tech, so of course she did.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's by the way, also not clear how far in the future they ended up. Never said.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a guess based on her age. You can guess, like, it's probably at least 60 years or 56 years, something like that. But we don't know.
Yeah, good point. Yep. Yeah.
Jack says, we're home thanks to one sparky young Lieutenant Hammond. and Carter, Hammond is there, of course, because he was like, in this situation especially, but he usually is there. We know that, like, when SG-1 mm-hmm. comes back. And Carter's talk says to Hammond, but you couldn't have known when to give it to me, like when to give the note to Carter. When Hammond says, no, mm-hmm. not until I saw the cut on your hand. Remember when I took your cuffs off? And then you must have, and Carter says, then you must have, then you've been waiting for this to happen. A very, very long time, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, what is that? 30 years?
30 years.
About 30
years.
He's
been waiting 30 years.
Yeah, for this day to happen. And then he says, it's going to be a long debriefing, people. And then he says,
yeah.
Oh, by the way, Colonel, with interest, you owe me $539.50.
Which is pretty funny, because he did remember, with interest.
With interest, yeah. I think someone did the math, and it was about $120 back then, or something like that. So...
Well, we don't know what the interest rate was that Hammond
that's
was
true, but if
working
you take,
with.
If you take the average interest rate, that would have been, like, I mean, like at the time, then like over time, basically the average, just a normal average interest rate that normally would have been charged. That someone did the math and said it's like, I think it was like 586 or something like that. I know, 123 or something like that. So yeah, that is the end of a fun story.
Yeah, I thought it was a super fun story.
Yes.
Yep.
So, what are you thinking about this? Like, did you enjoy it? Did you not enjoy it? Before we go into chevrons, just general feelings. Like, what stood out to you from this episode?
Okay, so first off, yes, I did point out that there were all these flaws throughout the episode. Don't Little take one. That to mean I didn't enjoy the episode. I thought it was an absolute delight from beginning to end. I loved this episode. It was fun. I loved getting to see our Stargate team in a mm-hmm. completely different type of situation than we've seen them before.
Yes.
The two main guest stars, so Michael and Jennifer, mm-hmm. those were great characters.
Really great, yeah.
And it there were some cool callbacks that we got mm-hmm. as well.
Fun with Lieutenant Hammond.
And fun with Lieutenant Hammond.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was just an absolutely awesome episode. Mm-hmm. I had so much fun watching this one.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they got to leave Cheyenne Mountain for a change, not be around. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's other than the beginning and the end, they're basically not at Cheyenne Mountain at all. So, mm-hmm. like, that was also fun. I think probably also fun for the crew.
We don't have to deal out. With... There's no alien threat in this one.
No, it's true. I mean, they are the aliens, kind of.
They're definitely aliens out of time. Yeah.
Yes, they also pretend to be aliens. Yeah, no, I'm with you on this one. Like, this was an episode. I think it is for a lot of people one of the favorite episodes. I always remember it. I always watch it. I always find it a great time. As you said, it's just a fun episode. We don't deal with the Goa Uld. Like, they don't even come up at all. It's also good.
Well, they did briefly, because Teal'c commented if they don't get away back to their own time, at some point his Goa'uld symbiote will take over his body.
But barely.
But that's it.
Barely. But it's not about the Goa'uld as a threat for the universe or Earth or whatever. Like,
yeah,
barely mentioned. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah. Good. Good callbacks there. So yeah, what is your chevron rating? Let's go to
8, hands down. I don't even have to pause to think about it. And I'm so glad that this one comes after the episode where we discover there's an 8th chevron, so that I can give this one 8.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. I'm with you. Hands down, not even a doubt. Immediately, it's an 8. It's just such a fun ride, and it's just a great episode. And I think, unless you have anything else you want to mention, I think that concludes this very fun, very cool, very easy to watch also episode. Highly recommend if you haven't seen it. Watch it again. I mean, I hope you did, because why else would you listen to this?
I'm going to watch it again. Absolutely.
Go do that. Yeah. But you know, Jeff, what you really should watch is the next episode.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to watch the next episode first, but I will go back and watch 1969 again, because it was so much fun.
Yeah. So, we do get, we're at the end of the season now. We do get mm-hmm. the final episode. Episode 22. It's a part 1 of 2, even though it doesn't say in the title. They do the cliffhanger again.
Okay.
Because of course they did, because I mean, we learned earlier, the beginning, that they had already, I think when they started airing the season 1 pilot, they had already signed up for, I think, 4 seasons. So we did, that was a cliffhanger here. And it's out of mind. And what that means, well, you will have to figure out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it. Mm-hmm. And after 1969, this one has to be a strong episode because we've gotten to the end of the season on a super high note with 1969. Yep. So they need to give us a solid episode. And but it seems likely that's what we're getting because it's going to be a cliffhanger.
It is. And it was written by Jonathan Glasner and Brent White, and it was directed by Michael Wood. I can tell you that much. So you know who the crew is that is working on this or had.
So they put an A-team on this one.
They definitely did. Whether that worked out or not, I will not tell you. You will have to watch it and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. All right. Good. Then, let's close this episode. Thank you, for listening. Thanks so much for doing this with me. It's been a lot of fun. I can tell you one thing. I don't say that very often, but I do say it every now and then. There are certain episodes that I look forward to watching with you, and this one was from the get-go one of them. Because I remember it very well. It's one of my favorite episodes, and I kind of wanted to really see how you, especially coming from Colorado and knowing also the environment a little bit, could have been that you're like, okay, no, this is complete crap and none of that works. So you never know. But I had a feeling you would enjoy it.
Oh, I absolutely enjoyed it, even though I found all these flaws. It didn't matter because they weren't flaws that had a bearing on the quality of the episode.
Yeah, and we know that they shot it in Vancouver, so it's not a surprise that the environment doesn't 100% match.
Right. Well, and if you know the ecosystem around Colorado Springs,
very different.
You would laugh at the outdoor shots that they do.
Very different
around Colorado Springs. Yeah,
exactly. So, like I said, that kind of, for most people who are not from that area, they probably wouldn't know. Or unless you've been there, then you would know. You might. But most people, especially back then, probably didn't. So it's fine. It really doesn't matter. But the story is good, and it makes... They try to make
sense. It's a great story.
They try to make as much sense as they can. They couldn't fly everybody down to Colorado to shoot the outdoor scenes. That's too expensive.
Way too expensive. And if you're going to do it for one episode, then you're committed to do all your outdoor shots.
Oh, it's true.
In the same area.
At least they stayed consistent. It's always the BC area. So the vegetation and everything still fits together. Yeah. Except for the one shot from Cheyenne Mountain, but that's a different story.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep. Totally different plant life.
Yeah, that's true. So Out of Mind is coming up, but can you tell people where they can find out more about you?
Sure. They can find out more about me. How about through social media? Mm-hmm. Jay Gamut on the different platforms, and I'm posting on Mastodon and PixelFed and Blue Sky. And I'll pick a couple shows where people can find me. Mm-hmm. How about Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live? Mm-hmm. And on the Big Show and the Mac Show on the British Tech Network.
Very cool.
Which, by the way, I do with you too.
That we do. And if the Arizona, the Colorado Tourist Board or whatever it's called wants to sponsor us and that we talk more about the awesome state that Colorado is, then you know how to reach us now. Which is hello@retrorewatch.com or by email or social media. We are on Mastodon @retrorewatch@takingout.social or on Blue Sky @retrorewatch.com. That's where we can be reached. Also, if you have...
So where can people get a hold of you?
I'm also around. I'm with you, as you mentioned, on the British Tech Network every week. Everything I'm doing is on my website. TheBatteries.com takes you there. All the social media links, the podcast, the projects, everything. It's all there.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I think with that, we should close the gate. Don't do time travel anymore. Make sure you jump through at the right time. You don't, so you don't end up in the future accidentally. Well, actually, that would be quite fun. I would do it, but other people might not. And I mean, who knows? Maybe the future is not so great, and I kind of don't want to go there. What do I know? Anyway,
as long as it's not a one-way path,
I would be fine with a one-way path. But I, as I said, there's a risk that I don't like it. I would be super interested.
If you have a two-way path, that's true. I mean, I'd be very interested. If you have a two-way path, you can choose not to go back.
That's true. That would be better. Yeah. But I would take probably a one-way path as well. Maybe. Who knows? I might regret it. But I would probably still take it. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for listening. Let's close the gate and talk to you next time on Out of Mind.